This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the final official EFL podcast of the season with me, Mark Clement. And first things first, congratulations on their promotions to the playoff winners, Luton Town, Sheffield Wednesday and Carlisle United. Time then to look back on the second half of a thoroughly entertaining campaign. At Christmas, our gift to you was a half-season Best of the Guests Part 1. I wonder if you can guess what the title is of this podcast. Yep, sit back and relax as we bring you Best of the Guests Part 2. It's the official EFL podcast. We start by rewinding to the middle of January and our conversation with Hull City head coach Liam Rossiniya. I think most of us know of Liam's fine football lineage, but some of you may not be aware of the many ties he has to his current locality. The connection to the city, and first of all, can we just explain, because you do have a family connection there, don't you? Do you want to just explain that for everybody who might not know this? Because there's therefore two threads to this, isn't there? The ex-player, but also the family connection.
Yeah, my nan moved to Hull probably 35 years ago now. She moved up here for work. And I always used to come up here as a young boy in the summer holidays to see her and my auntie Sarah as well, who still lives here with my cousins Mia and Jade and Kiri. So they're who we call them Hulligans in our family. They're whole born and bred. So when I first signed for the club, my nan actually was a season ticket holder watching the games before I came. And then I signed for the club under Nigel Pearson and surprised her. I took her to Toby Carvery and Willoughby and said, look, I'm signing for Hull. So she couldn't be happier with that. And she came to all the games and I got to take her to the cup final. She sadly passed away. The amazing thing is she passed away pretty much a year ago to the day when I took the job here. She was buried at Cottingham Cemetery. We're at Cottingham's training ground here. So literally a year ago to the day, I was up here, you know, celebrating her life. And then a year later, I become the manager of Hull City. So it's a pretty amazing set of coincidences.
What a lovely story. You're quite a skinny man, bearing in mind you frequent Toby Carvery's, Liam. You're doing quite well.
I wasn't doing eating.
Fair enough, mate. And the other part of this actually was, as a player, you used to stay with her sometimes as well when you were
in the spare room. It was great because my three children were born. Well, my youngest AJ was born here, but they were here, and my nan got to spend a lot of time with them while I was playing here. So it's so nice to be back.
Yeah. So is that? I mean, obviously you've mentioned the Cottingham connection, the training ground, but that's an extra dimension to this, does it not? And I guess there is that kind of spirit of Nan floating around you sometimes when you're at work. She must pop into your head occasionally.
She always does, especially when the supporters sing the song about her. But yeah, I'm really lucky to be here. I know what this football club's about. I know what this area is about. And I want to make her proud from up there. And I want to make this club successful. So it's a massive motivating factor for me.
It's a great story. And from the city of Kingston upon Hull, we travel up the East Coast to God's own country, or Middlesbrough, as I know it. When we spoke to club captain Johnny Howson at the end of January, we were keen to find out what effect Michael Carrick had had in the short time he'd been at the club.
I think when someone walks in through the door under the care of the manager, it's exciting for everyone, whether that's a fan, player, a coach, a staff member at the club, because of what he's done in the game, and everyone respects that.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, and particularly when he plays in your kind of position, when somebody comes in with that kind of professional pedigree, you know, 5 Premier League titles, FA Cup, 2 League Cups, Champions League, Europa League, I could go on and on and on. Does that bring a little bit of extra pressure, or do you see it as an opportunity to keep adding to your own skill mix?
No, it's an opportunity. And whether my time lasts with him months, years, who knows? No one can ever predict the future. And even now, I look at every day is a day that you can learn something. And as I go back to, and as yourself had said, regards to what he has won in his career, if he tells you something, it's, let's be honest, it's going to be right more than at times than not, because of he's been there and done it. He's been very successful. So you initially take that on board, and it's great just being out on the training pitch. Certainly, as you said, of playing the position that I'm playing at now, who better to learn? There's probably an handful of people in this country that are managing that, have got his credentials, if you like, from a playing career. So I think it's a great opportunity for you, whether you're at my stage of your career or the other side of the career of a midfield partner at the minute in Hayden, you know, just starting out. It's great for both of us, and it's only going to benefit as both and learn. And I can speak for both of us on this aspect that we both want to learn and get better if we can.
Yeah, Hayden Hackney, for anybody that hadn't worked it out, has come into the team over the last 12, 14 games or so. I just had as you were sort of talking about his credentials, suddenly it hit me, Johnny, that you will have played up against Michael, and there must be that moment when he's appointed where you think, oh, blimey, I hope I didn't duff him up at any stage or have a little head-to-head on the pitch or anything he's going to hold against me. Were you clean on that front?
Yeah, he'd actually done me one time, if I'm honest. From a fair point. Yeah, I've not spoken to him about it. Once he's been here a bit longer, I will mention it. But no, it was all fair. And let's be honest, when I played against him, I was probably just chasing him around and trying to get the ball off him. So I don't think I really got a chance to leave one on him because I couldn't get close to him.
I would love to be a fly on the wall when he brings up that tackle with the gaffer. One man who's never been afraid to get stuck in physically and indeed verbally, or in most cases both, is the unmistakable Charlie Austin. After a brief venture down under, Charlie finds himself back in the slightly less sunny surroundings of Swindon. So we were keen to catch up with him and find out why the move to Australia didn't quite work out as planned. Good to see you. I'm a little bit surprised. I thought Australia looked good on paper for you. I thought sunshine and all the rest of it.
Clem, do you know what? It wasn't to be, mate. Listen, I had a lovely time over there. It's what I expected. The weather was fantastic. Lovely country. But football wasn't the number one. And it was strange that not being the pinnacle. Football, the conversations all the time. Yes, it was happening in the... at the training ground and stuff and involved with the lads. But, you know, when you go away to whether you go to the pub or to the restaurant or to the shop, someone's always stopping you to speak about football and that. Football is like the fourth choice. And maybe when I first went over there, I probably thought, yeah, that'd be lovely. That's a bit of me, that. But it wasn't. I needed football to be in my life. It's been a big part of my, it's been my life the whole way through to now. So I've missed it more than anything. But on a bigger scale, mate, my eldest daughter was here, who's going through her last year at school. So she didn't want to come with us. That made it tough. 9-10 hours time difference speaking. It wasn't the one. And then around about end of October, I was driving home, my little boy, he's only six. He said to me, Dad, when do I get to go back to my old school and see my old friends? And I was like, no, I didn't expect this coming. And that was it. And I just made the decision. I come back to my wife and said, look, I think we're going to have to go back home. I think it's for the best. And I made the selfish decision to take us all over there. But listen, in this case, football comes second.
Yeah. Well, nothing ventured, nothing gained. Life's about a big adventure. Yeah. I probably didn't set it up right by saying you were playing for Brisbane Roar, who are managed by Robbie Fowler. So everything looked good on paper. Kids grow up as well, don't they? You know, you know, I know a lot of people with babies think, oh, you can just do whatever you want or order them about and things. But then their little personalities come to the fore and you have a few eureka moments where you think, actually, it'd be selfish of me to just keep driving on. I've got to take the little man.
And like I said to them, I made the selfish decision in the summer going there. I probably ran away, if I'm honest. I hold my hands up, probably ran away. it didn't work out like the ending was supposed to at QPR, and it never went forward anymore. And I just thought, listen, this ain't for me. Get me out of here, kind of thing. When I should have stayed. There's no probably about it. I should have stayed in the UK and played somewhere. But I wouldn't be speaking to you now as a Swindon Town player, would I? So,
from one favourite guest to another, the effortlessly charming and frankly inspirational Sol Bamba, having departed the Riverside and since joined the coaching staff with Cardiff City, we wanted to find out how Sol coped with what was always going to be a difficult decision to finally hang up his boots. When you do make the decision to hang your boots up, especially after the sort of variance of career that you have had, a lot of boys struggle, don't they? A lot of guys struggle immediately afterwards. Had you got a little template, a little master plan in place, or were you feeling your way and did you have a few wobbly moments?
Yeah, I did that, you know, and funny enough, you mentioned that. I didn't even announce my retirement of football. And that's telling you everything about it, because I still didn't know if I could, if I wanted to play, if I wanted to go to coaching or media. So what I did is just had a break after the Borough season I had there. And everyone was asking me, what are you going to do? Are you going to play again? I said, I just want to rest. I want to spend time with the family. And I think that helped me to figure out what I want to do. And I had a good time with the family. I went back to France to see my mum and dad and my brother and sister. It was good to know, you know, go to games and, you know, training every day and spend some quality time with the family. And after that, as I said, I need to go back in. And I think it worked perfectly, because I was said I would go back after the new year, and the gaffer had the job, and I managed to jump in with him. But it's a good question, and it's important, you know, if you can have a plan and struggle, because, you know, nothing is like football player. Let's be honest, Glenn, you know, it's the best job in the world. And all of a sudden, when you stop, even if you go coaching or media, you don't have the same buzz. And it's difficult, because what we try to do is to find that again. But it's impossible to find it. And that's why a lot of people struggle. So it's important to mention that.
Yeah, well, and there's two things that come out of that. I mean, first of all, you went back to see mum and dad. Was your mum on your case? It's still not too late for you to be a doctor, Sol, you know. Was she in your ribs telling you to go and do 7 years of qualifications and try and become a medic?
No chance, Clem. She knows there's no chance anymore with that. But she did say, asking you still got at least a year to carry on playing. But I said, no, mum, I think I had enough. You know, I had a perfect season with Middlesbrough. And I didn't want it to have a bit more, you know, bad moment, if you like, because you never know how you're going to finish. And for me to finish the way I finished with Middlesbrough was perfect.
Yeah. And the other thing is, you obviously took yourself to a place where you were very comfortable with yourself and your own skin, because when uncertainty surrounds us, sometimes we waste the kind of time that you had and we're willing to commit to the family. You know, we allow the uncertainty to stop us enjoying that moment of freedom that you've earned as a result of putting a shift in for the last decade and a half.
No, you're absolutely right, Glenn. I think that's the difficulty, really, because, you know, you I'm a player and I want to play and win. And I was always on the back of my head, oh, can I do another year? Can I do it again? Can I do it? But I think it's always, you have to pick the right moment to call it a day, because you don't want to do the extra year where, you know, you injured a lot or you don't bring what you want to bring to the team. And that always been in the back of my head. Even when I was very young, the oldest players used to say to me, you know, you need to know when to stop. You know, don't do the extra year where it's going to kill your legacy if you want. And that always stayed with me. So I think last year it was the best time to stop. And even if my mum tried to push me, it was too much for me.
From a fledgling young coach learning the ropes to a gnarly, more experienced one, as we turned our attentions to the intense pressure that managers find themselves under with Gillingham's Neil Harris at the end of February. I should share with anybody that's only listening to the audio version of this, not the video version, that we're talking to Neil on his day off in his man den. He's been allowed it with the sort of the history of his illustrious career all behind him. I want to talk to you about those 8 years as a manager, or rather, I guess I wonder how tough it is out there. I was a little bit shocked last week. I had Ian Everett on, And he said, despite the revival of Bolton Wanderers, he said, look, I'm not going to do this forever. It really takes it out of you. There's no way I'm going to be doing what Roy Hodgson did or Neil Warnock has been doing. I mean, just how all-consuming is the game at the moment with all those elements we've already reflected on now?
Yeah, I wonder, like with Knocker coming back in at 74, and yes, he'll only come in short term, I guess, and then sort of step away and then maybe come in again next year, you know, which really
sensible. Probably. Yeah. Well, yeah, there's no doubt about that.
No, it's really sensible at the age. And I just wonder if like Big Mick, if Ray, if Arsene Wenger, Alex Ferguson, Neil Warnock, would they, if they'd started in the era that me and Evo have started in, like now, with the scrutiny of not just the media, because it's always been there, but the in-depth scrutiny of the media now, but it's the social media. And as I touched on earlier, you know, a blame culture in society. If they had started in this era, would they still be doing it 30 years later? I'm not so sure. I certainly will not be doing it in 20 years' time. Clem, that's for sure. I won't be doing it for too much longer because it does consume you. It does eat your life. It can be a really lonely place at times. And you know, every job is tough in a different way. Just League Two, for example, and Richie Wellens, top of the league. But his job will be difficult. When I speak to Rich, his job can be difficult. And Richie's having a great period at the moment. They will get promoted. They will win the league. And they're a great side. And he's built really well there over a period of time. And but next year will be a completely different challenge for him in League One. And he knows that. And that could become more difficult. So you have to take the good times while you can because, you know, the tougher times in Football Manager are always just around the corner. You're only as good as your last four results, really. But it has completely changed. The game, the landscape has changed over my 8 years, for sure.
The football landscape certainly changed towards the end of this season. And who'd have thought so many of the old guard would be back in action? One man, though, brought a fresh approach and a cultured, continental vision to the Sky Bet Championship is the Blackburn Rovers manager, Jon Dahl Thomason. Adjusting to life in deepest Lancashire was always going to be tough, but in Jon's case, even more so, having to do it without the support of his family. I'm going to ask you a personal question. No need to worry. No need to panic. Everything's all right. But I think when I came to see you just before the season kicked off, I don't think you'd brought the family over, had you? Were the family still back in Denmark at the time?
Well, no, my family's living in Holland. They were actually here in the weekend. There was a great weekend. The oldest, he trained with Blackburn Rovers on the Saturday, and the youngest had a tournament at City, on the 11th tournament at City with Feyenoord on the Sunday. So we enjoyed a good weekend after beating Sheffield United.
Yeah, that okay. But I guess my question is, it's a big sacrifice you're making to be away from them all for such a long period of time. So who motivates the motivator? Who replenishes your energy levels at this point in the season when you don't have family to hand to be able to sit down and chat around the dinner table every night?
That's, of course, you're totally right. It's a big big decision as a family. And we are, of course, missing each other every day. I have a very strong wife who knows that I have a drive, extremely hard drive in the football world, and she accepted it. And a big compliment and big credit to her to dealing with that. Because, of course, it's not easy when the husband is living in another country and is working and working day and night in that way. But we used the time as good as possible. So it was great to see the family in the weekend, for example.
Yeah. Sorry, when you said you have a very strong wife, I had a picture of her lifting things.
Don't tell her that.
I thought you meant she did weightlifting and stuff like that for a little second.
I will ask her when I call her later if she started doing weightlifting.
Let's just hope that Mrs. Thomason didn't hear that episode and move swiftly on to the end of March when Michael Bridges joined us to chew the fat on all the week's EFL action. He enjoyed a fine career in English football and has the utmost respect for those he learned from along the way. And they don't come much bigger and more iconic than the inimitable Sir Bobby Robson. obviously, Roy Hodgson has come back to Crystal Palace at the age of 75 to the end of the season to try and help them. Neil Warnock is already in at Huddersfield Town and got himself an important win at Millwall at the weekend. Age, you were had that brief period at Newcastle United with the legend of all legends, Sir Bobby Robson.
Yes.
I worked out he was 71 at the time. For anybody that's casting doubts that these great football people can still do it past 70. Yeah. What was that time with Sir Bobby like, albeit brief?
It was a very, very brief time, and Sir Bobby was probably the grandfather that I never had. He was the most honest manager I've ever played under, and I wish it had been a longer period under him. For the age, and like you say about Hodgson and Warnock, they might not be able to get around the training park as much as they would have liked, but what he did, he had a guy in John Carver who was there to do the tactical sessions. What Bobby was he was a man manager, and he tried to keep that collective group as best as he could together and man manage them. And if you weren't selected for the bench, or you weren't selected for the starting 11, he would actually invite you into his office. So I remember three or four of us sitting in the office there, and he would explain to each one of you why and where, and offer you a cup of tea and say, you know, you've missed out this week because of this. And it was just so refreshing, because I'd heard so much BS in the past where you're thinking managers have told you a complete lie, or they haven't even explained why. And it was just so refreshing to understand why. And just to give you an idea, he had offered me a new contract, another year extension, because he said, we've still got, there's still something in there that I want, but you're not fit enough yet, and I need another season under you. So, you know, that was really nice. And I remember at the end of the year, I got beat off Marseille in the European Cup. Didier Drogba had like the world's best two legs against Jonathan Woodgate. And what I remember is in the summer, just at the off-season, we hadn't actually signed. We're just about to negotiate. I was driving to Leeds, and I was actually just passing your neck of the woods in Middlesbrough, coming over the flyover. Oh. And I got a phone call Bobby. And Bobby said to me, are you in the car, Michael? I said, yes. He said, can you pull over somewhere so I can have a chat with you? And I said, I'll ring you back when I do. So I pulled over, and he was all about apologising, because he'd reneged on the contract offer that he'd said about me. And he said, but what I am going to do, it's out of my hands. I'm going to find you and help you get another football club. I'm really sorry. I'm never go against my word. I told you I could give you another contract, but I can't, unfortunately, due to circumstances. Are you okay? Do you need us to get somebody to come and meet you in the motorway there? And I was kind of like, he was doing everything just to make sure I was fine. And I was obviously absolutely gutted. So I put the phone down to Bobby. I said, I'll ring him back once I got the house. And I rang my dad, and I told my dad what had happened. And he said, well, son, did you not ask Bobby how he was? And I says, no. He said, well, he's just been sacked. He never mentioned it. All he was bothered about was me. He never mentioned it. Yeah. So that just shows you the mentality of Sir Bobby. He was all about, and he did. He helped me get a club. I got to Bolton Wanderers with Sam Allardyce. So there you go. That's Sir Bobby in a nutshell. Yeah. It's all about everybody. Man manager, mate.
And that you mentioned the granddad you never had.
Yeah.
That gulf, does the respect overpower the kind of gulf in ages between you? Because
without a shadow of a doubt, it's respect, isn't it? And that's what it is. Like knowledge and the trophies that he won. I mean, I love the More Than a Manager documentary about Sir Bobby. It's incredible. It just shows, you know, like how he had the relationship with the journalists. He had a relationship with the staff. He made sure everybody at the football club was respectful to every staff member. And if you weren't, then you were outed. Whether it was the kit people, the ground staff, the team persons, it was incredible. He just had this lovely, it was just, he was brought up the right way, and he tried to pass that on to others and mentor them, and he did that spectacularly for me. And you can see the knowledge that he had in football, that he just couldn't get on the training park to deliver it. But tactically, he knew what he was doing. He had John Carver alongside him. And sadly, you know, sadly at the end of his reign, it was cancer got Bobby for the sixth time. I think he battled it five times, and there was a lovely thing. So Bobby Robson 5, cancer 1, and he'll always be remembered so fondly in so many people's lives. And I just wish I'd had longer with him, mate, to be honest with you.
Michael Bridges on the great Sir Bobby. Passing on knowledge is a big part of what football is all about. And when your dad was a great footballer himself, there are some who might find it tough living in the shadow of their old man. Although Ipswich Town's George Hurst seems to be coping rather well. For those that hadn't worked it out, David Hurst, Sheffield Wednesday legend, part of the 91 League Cup winning team. Help or hindrance having him as your old man?
Massive help. Yeah, massive help. I'd never ever say it was a hindrance to anybody. You know, I've been asked a lot of times, you know, what's it like, you know, having that pressure on your shoulders, and I'd sort of just, I don't see it as pressure. You know, I understand how good he was back in the day and how he's viewed, especially in Sheffield, by a lot of people and what he did for Sheffield Wednesday. So, but to me, it's still just my dad who was pretty good at football. So I sort of don't see it as the pressure side of it. I don't see it as following in his footsteps or, you know, trying to be as good as he was. If we stood next to each other, I'm a lot taller than he is, you know, these days a lot slimmer. It's, you know, straight away there's a lot of difference.
Better looking, Dave.
You know, I'd say so. He'd probably give you a different answer to that, but straight away there's a lot of differences between how my dad used to play and how I play these days. Don't be wrong, there's a lot of similarities, I think, and obviously I've learned a lot of things that I try and put into my game from him, and I've watched every single goal I think he's ever scored probably 10-15 times. I could probably name them all for you if I really wanted to, and it's just nice to have that person there of, you know, he's, I've said it before, and in the sense of I'll speak to him straight away after a game, and if he says I've done all right, then I know I've had a really good game, because he's, you know, that's just the way he is with me. He's always been that way with me. Of, you know, there's always things we can improve on, but when you've done all right, yeah, you're pretty good today. And for me, I've always found it as a massive help, you know, not coming off the pitch thinking, have I done all right, have I not, and being told I've been amazing and brilliant, and because I don't think that gets you anywhere. I think you need that honesty, and he's always give it to me. And so, yeah, always a help, never a hindrance.
Yeah, I do. I laughed again, not just because of your chronic criticism of his physique, but it just made me wonder. You said you were familiar with all his goals, whereas when most kids were growing up sitting on their dad's lap watching reruns of Lion King or something like that, he was just on YouTube playing you all his best goals. Here's one I got against Barnsley.
Yeah, exactly. There's a few chances I've missed in the last few years that he go back and say that was like my one at so-and-so. The only difference is I put it in the back of the net. So I try and learn as much as I possibly can from him, for sure.
The beginning of April saw Bolton Wanderers take on Plymouth Argyle at Wembley in the Papa John's Trophy final. We managed to get both managers together a few days before the big showdown. Step forward, Ian Evatt and Stephen Schumacher. There must be some managers who you are more fond of facing than others, are there, and some that you positively just want to get the experience out of the way? As I stress, this is the official EFL podcast, so let's not fall out with anybody. But would that be true? There'd be some you just go, oh, for goodness sake, I'm not having him.
Yeah, I think so. I think you go into certain games and you know that it's going to be a bit lively on the touchline. So we try and make a conscious effort to sign on and get involved. I've said it loads of times, Clem, there's too much for me at this stage in my career as a manager there's too much going on the pitch for me to be worrying about arguing with opposition managers or fourth officials. So as best as I can, I try and keep me cool. I've lost my cool once this season and paid a punishment for it. Got a one-game touchline ban, so, and a fine, and I won't be doing that again.
Yeah. And Ian, when you do come off and you might have been involved in an incident like Shuey, are you getting regulated by family and maybe yourself as well 48 hours later, where you look at the pictures and you think, come on, what was I doing? Yeah.
My 11-year-old son is the regulator in my family. He's the one that has a go at me. Similar to Shuey, I've had three yellow cards this season. And I'm always trying to improve myself. And that's one area where I've needed to improve, not getting involved with opposition, not getting involved with referees. I do think that the more time you do arguing with whoever else, you're taking time away from the team, and the team is what needs you the most and needs your focus. So again, that's probably an area where I've had to work on and improve.
Yeah. I was a little bit surprised when producer Dave, he had this idea of getting the two of you together, and then he came back quite quickly and said, yeah, they've both come back to me. They're both happy. Because I wondered whether this is a challenge for a manager, Shuey, because you wouldn't be so daft as to give anything away about the game itself, but obviously people will be judging, won't they? You don't want to say anything that motivates Ian's players. You know you've got to keep your supporters on side and not get too cozy. Is it? Does that stuff go through your mind?
Yeah, I think so. But also, Clem, I think the work that goes on now behind the scenes, like with the analysts and the amount of research that I know coaches and managers do on opposition, then I don't think there's many secrets about how we're going to play or how Evo's going to play. We've played against each other twice already this season and twice last season, I think, as well. Yeah, there's nothing really too much to hide. So for me, when I got asked to come on the call, I was well up for it. Let's have a good old natter about Sunday, because I'm sure Evo's excited as much as I am, and our fans are going to be proper looking forward to it as much as Bolton's will be as well.
Okay, well, Evo's got the first challenging question of this particular episode, because I want to know what you admire about Shuey, Ian.
There's lots of things, really, and just touching on what Shuey's just said there, I think if you understand the game and understand what our two philosophies are about, then we're just backing ourselves regardless. We're not going to change too much for the opposition. Shuey will back his team and I'll back my team. And the way we go about things, there's not really many secrets at all. I know pretty much how Plymouth are going to play, and I'm sure Shuey thinks exactly the same about how we're going to play. What I will say is, on the day, I just hope the best team wins, whether that's them or us. There's no controversy. There's no dodgy decisions. There's no, you know, scoring against the run of play or whatever else and nicking a victory. It's just may the best team win. It's a fantastic final for the EFL. It's a fantastic final for League One football. And, you know, both clubs' ticket sales are through the roof, which speaks volumes to the connection that we've both got with our fan bases, which is fantastic.
Yeah. Before I press you to answer my last question, let's just build on that. I mean, in terms of razzmatazz, and I think I'm right in saying your club are suggesting you could be a sort of 50-year high in terms of bums on seats supporting you on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, we've sold, I think, at the moment, 9,000 more tickets than what we did for the 2011 FA Cup semi-final, which, again, speaks volumes about what we're doing. Just touching on your last question, because I don't want to avoid it. Look, I haven't an awful amount of respect for anybody that takes on the job as a manager, because it's incredibly intense. It's really hard work. There's a lot of sacrifices that go with it. And especially for young managers who are making the way in the game, myself and Shuey are both very young managers, both had a lot of success pretty early on. And just an admiration for the way his team plays, the way his team against the grain, really, of the division. You know, I don't really like talking about finances and spending money, because it's not really the way I want to do things. But what I would say is both teams are trying to do things in what I believe a sustainable manner. I know both ownerships are talking to each other behind the scenes about the way we do things and the way they do things, and it's very, very similar. There's a clear strategy and a clear plan. And to be at the top of this league with the clubs that are surrounding him and his football club is an amazing achievement. So I really do hope, hand on heart, not just saying it because he's here, that they do get promoted, because I'd love someone to do it against the grain.
And Shuey, being that Ian is a couple of seasons down the line further on from you, is he the sort of person you'll be looking at what he did at certain points and how he's developed, even somebody you might pick the phone up to occasionally for little pointers and tips?
Definitely, yeah. I think, say, the success that Ian's had with Bolton over the last few seasons has been amazing. I think that a team who was so strong in loads of different areas, they have, as he said, they've got a real clear way of playing, and they've been like that now for a few years. And when they get the momentum behind them, they're a tough team to stop. The run that he's went on, getting out of League Two, was incredible. Getting up into League One, and then the first season in League One, you know, played some amazing football, got going again, Evo, if I'm right, towards the second half of the season. And then I've started this season really well. So I've been in contention up in the top six pretty much all season. So yeah, nothing but respect. Has been doing it consistently now over a few years, and yeah, it's someone that I can definitely look at and say, well, keep going, keep trying to do what I believe in, and as Ian does as well, stick to your plan, stick to your philosophy, and keep working hard at it, and hopefully get the rewards in the end.
Two exciting young managers with great respect for each other who've both had fantastic campaigns in Sky Bet League One. And making his way into that division in August will be Leighton Orient's Richie Wellens. He's had a phenomenal year at Brisbane Road. We spoke to him the morning after the promotion night before, as you can probably tell from the rasp in his voice. Now, listen, we're catching you just less than 24 hours after the final whistle at Gillingham. I think we can sense that it's taken it out of you. Your voice is sounding a little bit hoarse. I mean, first of all, what bizarre circumstances to get promoted after a rare-ish defeat this season, but also that you find out during a lull in the game because the floodlights failed with, or the lights failed with 12 minutes to go. I mean, so mind you, this is your party piece. I mean, your last promotion when you were in charge of Swindon was in the middle of a worldwide pandemic. So I don't know what that says about you, mate.
Yeah, no, nothing's ever easy, is it? And our supporters was at Leighton Orient, we always make it difficult. Nothing's ever easy, blah, blah. Well, we've won promotion with, what is it, 4 games left?
Yeah.
But then when the lights failed last night, it's like, Jesus Christ, maybe the supporters are right. It's not easy. But I'd love to say that I had a lot to drink last night, and this is hence why my throat is sore. It's not, Clem, the referee last night was that poor. That's why my throat's killing me. So anyway, we'll leave that. No, I just think that when you celebrate like that, it's surreal. The lights have just gone out.
Yeah.
You know that there's 10 minutes of the game left. We're waiting for the Swindon result in because the other two teams, Stevenage and Northampton, have won. And then we're about to kick off and it's 90 plus 10 at Swindon v Bradford. We're literally about to restart the game, and then obviously we get news at the game. Our supporters start cheering, so then we realise that we've been promoted. So then there's actually an extra lull in the game because it's only natural to start celebrating. So, yeah, really, really surreal. But we do have 2 home games now, which obviously gives us another opportunity to celebrate.
I get that, but because it was not only the 11 that were on the field that were celebrating, but all the subs came on, the backroom staff and everything. Did you have to ask permission from 4th to come running on the field? Because like, you know what the game's like these days. You all go piling on like that and stuff. Did you have permission?
So what it was is the lights have come back on. Yeah. The referee then pulled myself and Neil Harris and said, are you happy just to kick off straight away without any warm up? We said, yeah, let's just crack on. It's getting on now. We knew that we'd lost the game. We were down to 10 men. And then the referee then decides to go off with his 4th official and the 2 linesmen, and then leaves us stood outside for another 10 minutes. So it wasn't like we've run on the pitch and the referee's out. The referee was actually off the pitch as well.
Okay, gotcha. Your emotion when you realise, oh, I suppose you're still trying to manage the game, make sure you don't get done for 3s or 4s and stuff. But if not, when you knew from the crowd, or maybe as the final whistle went and you're out there on the field, what's swilling around you, Richie? What are you feeling?
Immense pride. But, you know, I really bought into Leighton Orient as a club. I'd look back and what the club had gone through with the Italian owners, being relegated from League One, being relegated from League Two, having players on huge, huge wages, and then Nigel and Kent taking over, saving the club. The club didn't even have a bank account. It was in a really poor, poor state. And then they get their act together. They get a good manager in Justin Edinburgh to get them promoted from the National League. And then his death just rocked the club. So you imagine being involved in a club, whether it be a player, whether it be the board member, a member of staff, to have someone that you have such affection for lose a life while they've just achieved something great for the club. So immense pride. I'm pleased for someone like Martin Ling, who, when the owners took over, they had a 6-year plan to get it into League One. This was a 6-year. So I was under a little bit of pressure from that, but they did supply me a budget, which was about around seventh in the league, so it did give me a chance. You know, Martin Ling was under a little bit of pressure when I went in there from the outside. I thought that Martin was doing a good job. But then when you get into the nitty-gritty of your daily job, you understand that Martin Ling's under a little bit of pressure. I'm pleased for him, probably as much as anybody, because what he does for me is fantastic. Obviously, he does all the contracts and recruitment. And what I can only comment on the last 15 months and what he has done has been fantastic. He's helped me a lot, so I'm really pleased for him.
Congratulations once again to Richie Wellens and his Leighton Orient side. In February this year, after resisting the advances of so many potential suitors for more than a decade at Wickham Wanderers, Gareth Ainsworth finally swapped Adams Park for Loftus Road. We caught up with him at the end of April, when it's fair to say there was only one thing on his mind. You've gone a long way with the way in which teams down the bottom have been taking points off each other. I guess you just want to secure safety, as you've intimated, and then you can start, A, making sure the club's not in this situation again, and B, have you got a template in mind that might see the club prosper more consistently at the other end of the Skybet Championship table?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I've got three plans, all time-based, and the short-term is survive. The midterm, honestly, and I'll say this in the greatest respect to everyone, every QPR fan who thinks that we should be back in the Premier League, we need to stabilise this club. There's some things behind the scenes that need sorting out. There's a lot that's got just a little bit away from what this club should be for me. And I aim to, with the help of Les Ferdinand, who's been nothing but support to me since I've walked in the door, and the owners, I just think it just needs that little bit of identity back, and I want to bring that, and there's ways to do it, there's ways I will do it, and you know, it might not be popular with everyone, but I'm going to do this because this is the way I believe it should be done, and I had a great grounding at Wickham, nothing like QPR, I know that, but I think the running of a club can be similar, just on a bigger scale. And then long term, I want to get this club touching, and not just this club, I want to have a go. I want to get to the right end of the Championship and start going, right, this Premier League, this golden fleece that everyone talks about, is it possible? Is it possible for a club like QPR to get back there? Because at the moment, it seems like a million miles away. And if I was a foreign manager, maybe I'll have a chance of managing the Premier League. But the only way I think I can ever manage in the Premier League is by taking a team up into the Premier League. And I'd love to do that one day with QPR. A lot of work to do first. Firstly, let's stay in the Championship.
He kept QPR in the Skybet Championship, and we look forward to seeing what Gareth does with them in his first full season with the club. We're nearly at the end now, and to the other end of the second tier table. So many people have paid homage to Burnley's fantastic achievements under Vincent Kompany this year, but hot on their heels for most of the way and joining them in securing automatic promotion was Sheffield United. We spoke to their manager, Paul Heckingbottom, shortly after they'd secured their promotion. And I think it's fair to say it was difficult to wipe the smile off his face. But that moment when the final whistle goes and you know you've achieved your season's objective, you just have to embrace, cuddle and kiss that moment, don't you, Paul?
Yeah, definitely. But I think we've got good Clem at making sure we celebrate all the wins. We've made a big thing of that. It's important. It's what we do it for. We enjoy winning. But there, yes, that moment was special. It was almost felt after the FA Cup semi-final as if there was an expectation that it was just going to happen, when we knew internally we still needed 3 points because we had to expect Borough, Luton and the teams behind us to be winning. But our form in April, obviously we got a man sent off against Burnley in the first 15 minutes. But apart from that, in the other 6 league games, we've won every one. So we've sort of given no one a chance to get close to us. So for us to do it at the first time of asking in that game against West Brom, we couldn't have writ it any better. You know, it's gone to plan, allowed us to celebrate, and allowed, that moment of relief and for everyone to be excited and celebrate together in the 2 home games that we've had at Bramall Lane.
It's that word relief, isn't it? It's what just about every manager says when they get over the line. And, you know, I was watching the pictures of Wrexham 10 days ago, And Phil Parkinson at that moment, he just looked as though his eyes were going to close and he was going to go to sleep. I don't think people realize the pressure, the strain that you guys are under, carrying the weight and expectations of, in your case, half a city on your shoulders.
Yeah, listen, it's there and it's, obviously it's a tough part of the job, but it's the bit that makes it rewarding. You know, when you achieve like this, it's so satisfying and proud. I'm proud of everyone we've been working with. I'm delighted for everyone who comes to watch us. There's been a lot of good work gone off at the club. I know we've had not the best of headlines because of things going off, but there's a real sense of togetherness at the minute around the football club, and that's great. Really, really proud of that. But yeah, there's certainly, I probably had it on Monday when I was watching the football, that little bit of realisation, and then fatigue set in and a little bit tired, and all of a sudden, whoosh, you know, that adrenaline goes. But then guess what? It all starts again for the next season, the next day. So that's how it is. So yeah, you don't, whilst, like I said, I think that's why we work hard to enjoy the games and enjoy the wins, because you've just got to keep rolling and get on with it the next day for the next game.
You did not do that old man thing of allowing your eyes to close on the sofa for 15 minutes there, did you, Paul? Did you allow yourself a small nap?
A nap? It's more like being unconscious.
Yeah. That is it for the 2022-23 season. A huge thank you to all of the guests who've joined us over the past 10 months. If you've enjoyed this or any of the episodes you've heard, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. I'm Mark Clement. Enjoy your summer, and thanks for joining us for
the official EFL podcast.